Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Call it buyer's remorse or a search for an off-ramp, it doesn't matter. Trump wants out of the war he started and can't finish. However, getting out and ending this conflict is not the same. Israel still has a say, and importantly, Iran has a veto. Crosstalking the war on Iran, I'm joined by my guest Stanley Cohen in New York. He is a human rights lawyer. In London, we cross to Abdelbari Atwan. He is editor at Rai Al Yom. And in New Delhi, we cross to Kanwal Sibal. He is a former foreign secretary of India. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Stanley, let me go to you first here. Where do we stand right now? There's utter confusion coming out of the White House. The Iranians have made it very clear that they're in no communication with this administration, and the conflict continues. And what does this five-day pause mean to you? I mean, I have more questions than we could possibly answer on this program. Go ahead, Stanley.
It means nothing. We stand nowhere. Donald Trump is all about deflection. He will do anything to take the world's eyes away from Epstein, away from ICE raids, away from a failing economy, away from Kristi Noem. This is all about deflection. First, it was Venezuela. That did not work. Now there's Iran. He's a perfect foil for Netanyahu, who's getting exactly what he wants. So when Trump says today, tomorrow, 5 days, we're there, we're not, we're going to, ignore it. It doesn't mean anything. He's going to keep going until he finds the next deflection. He's petrified about being impeached again. He's petrified about the upcoming elections. He will do anything and everything to anyone he can in order to keep the clock ticking away from accountability for him. He's a huckster. He spent his entire career as a huckster, whether it's as a businessman going bankrupt, as someone who's indicted and convicted, or now as a president.
Abdel, in London, you know, it's very difficult to decipher this administration because it changes its mind, not on a daily basis, sometimes on an hourly basis, but it doesn't change the reality on the ground. This so-called five-day pause isn't going to change anything. The missiles are flying back and forth as we speak right now. Is this a gambit to seriously think about an off-ramp, or is this administration completely at a loss? It doesn't know what to do.
Well, to be honest, I believe Trump did not win this war. He expected it to be very short and very clean and very quick. Now it is our 25th days of this war, and now he is actually begging for talks, for diplomacy to work. And I don't believe it will work if the Iranians don't trust him. Most of the Middle Eastern countries even don't trust him. They believe he is just talk and talk and talk, and he never respected his word. This is the biggest issue. I believe also the Iranian did not raise the white flag, and they never surrendered at all. He was gambling that the Iranian will be scared and surrender. And also the Israeli miscalculated. They thought that the Iranian will be like the other Arabs, other Arab government, who are really sort of scared of their power or scared from the American power. So to calculate the situation now, I believe the American lost this war, and they are actually now begging the Iranian to talk. And the Iranian are very reluctant to talk with the American. They had a lot of rounds of talk, and the outcome was absolutely useless and unsuccessful at all. This is the problem. There is no faith on the American, and Trump actually losing the Middle East and also losing the European, and also using his own people. 66% of the Americans saying no to Trump and no to this war, which is Israeli war. It is not American or European war.
Yeah, Kanwal in New Delhi, I started making a list of things that Trump has said in the last 72 hours, but the list got too long. And so I'm just going to read one quote when the president was asked, well, what's going to happen to the Straits of Hormuz? And this is what he said. The Strait of Hormuz will be controlled by me and the Ayatollahs. I mean, what is the, I mean, as a diplomat yourself, sir, how do you calibrate this kind of language coming from an American president during a time of war, a time of war that was a choice?
Well, if this is the first time he said things which don't make any sense, then I would say this is something new and we need to pass it and see if we can draw some meaning from it. But he's been saying things. And even now, when he talks about having opened some kind of a dialogue with Iran, he's saying things which don't make sense. And what you quoted just now about he and Ayatollah sharing the Strait of Hormuz, on the other hand, he's been also saying that it is not this Mojtaba Khamenei. He doesn't recognize him as the Ayatollah. He says he's talking to somebody who is widely respected within the organization, but it's not Khamenei. And he's talking about Kalibaf, the speaker of the Iranian parliament. So on the one hand, he says he's not going to talk to Ayatollah, he doesn't recognize him, he's talking to the speaker. On the other hand, he says he's going to share the future of the Strait of Hormuz between him and the Ayatollah. Now, he's assuming that there'll be an agreement by the Iranians to give him a role. But then the surprising thing is he also says, I don't need the Strait of Hormuz. Other countries need it. And they should therefore come in and open it. He can live without it. So if he's not interested in opening the Strait of Hormuz because he's not dependent on it, so why does he want to share it with the Ayatollah or anybody else? It just doesn't make any sense. Now, what the points the other two panelists made, I think they're very right, except that I don't think with all the noises that he's making, which is totally confusing, which do not tell us in which direction he's going, I don't think it helps him in terms of the midterm elections or drawing attention away from his problems at home. In fact, it'll deepen his problems at home.
Yes, it does.
Because he's going to come a cropper in what he has undertaken as an adventure, and that'll damage his prospects even more. So I therefore don't. And then finally, Peter, I'm very surprised that the Americans are very, very good at wargaming. In fact, the models that they have for wargaming are actually copied by many other countries. Therefore, I'm surprised that nobody really wargamed the situation and anticipated what the Iranians would do because they had a knowledge of what the Iranians' capacities are, which were demonstrated in the 12-day war. So how come they waded into this without considering that the obvious thing that he would do would be to attack the Gulf states as well as seek to control the Strait of Hormuz? Doesn't make any sense.
Well, Stanley, I'm just a TV talk show host, okay? And if I were asked, you know, a month ago, Peter, what would happen if a war started, if Israel and the United States attacked Iran? I would say they would close the Strait of Hormuz. You would say exactly the same thing. Abdel would say the exact thing. All of us would say exactly the same thing. And, oh, it was a surprise? Oh, our bases are going to be attacked? This is absurd. Stanley.
Trump never heard of the Strait of Hormuz before. Trump knows nothing about the Middle East. He knows nothing about the regions. Respectfully, I agree. His political standing in the United States is a disaster. But the way he deals with his political standing in the United States is to blame everyone else and to move the ball. I'm waiting for the next peace board to be developed, where for another $1 billion, we'll have 15, 20, or 30 individuals, presidents of oil companies, coming on and saying, we'll find a way to peace. Trump is going to continue doing and saying nothing and just going from issue to issue until the next deflection comes on. Your other panelist is absolutely correct. America's disgusted with this. It's sick of this. But at this point, Congress is frozen. It's playing no role whatsoever. The streets of America are packed with ICE agents, are packed with federal agents all over the place, people being detained, people being arrested, people being executed, an administration that's got a cabinet of fools, of incompetent people that are quislings that'll just tell him what he wants to hear. And meanwhile, Netanyahu's getting everything he wants to get. Mass slaughter in Lebanon, mass slaughter in Iran, Gaza, the world's moved on from its eyes while the West Bank is being attacked with increasing frequency day by day. So this is the ideal situation for Netanyahu, who has pulled the plug with a fool. Donald Trump is incompetent. He's a fool. He's lost. And putting aside the fact he's suffering clearly from dementia, From one minute, it's A. From the next minute, it's Z. From the next minute, I didn't say that. But he doesn't care. It has always been about his own personal benefit and his own personal survival. Looking for an end to this latest war, find a way for Trump and his family to make billions of dollars, and it'll be over.
Well, Abdel, I was going to, on the tail of the comment from Stanley there, I mean, it's remarkable to make this statement, and it's very traceable who made a lot of money for the so-called cause. But moving forward, The conflict continues here. It's a side that talks about a ceasefire. That side is losing. Iran isn't asking for a ceasefire. Ergo, it's winning.
You know, the problem is Trump always saying the Iranian want a ceasefire. And they never said that. They said, you are lying. You are not saying the truth. The Iranian, you know, they are continue this war. They want a war of attrition against the Iranian, against the American and against the Israeli. The magic word is, you know, they changed the whole situation by the cluster bomb and also the hypersonic missiles. This is the magic words here, which change the whole situation on the ground. You know, look at Tel Aviv, for example. It is for the first time in 76 years, Israel is bombed, and a lot of destruction, a lot of death and injured people, Israeli. So this is nobody talk about that. You know, the part of Tel Aviv is like Gaza now. It is completely destroyed. And also two nights ago, for example, you know, we seen how the Iranian missile hit Dimona, which is supposed to be the most protected city in Israel, where the nuclear program or nuclear establishment, Israeli one, is there. So I believe Israel lost, actually. It is magic word, and to be the superpower. Iran now is a superpower.
This conflict is far from over, at least in my opinion. Gentlemen, I'm going to interrupt myself, or I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the war on Iran. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the war on Iran. Kenwell, let's go back to you in New Delhi here. As a diplomat yourself, I would presume, and you know, I say that with a very heavy heart, because I've been trying to use common sense, knowledge of history, geopolitics, et cetera, to understand the situation. It's very difficult to do that because we have decision makers that, in my mind, are being very irrational. This whole war is irrational. However, it seems to me if there's any negotiations, and there will be at some point, but the negotiations will be run by Tehran. They will have their lists of demands that they're going to force upon the administration. Now, obviously, they'll probably come out with their maximalist demands. I would, anyone else would. But they're going to be the ones that draw the line in the sand and say, this is what the conversation is going to be about. It's not this nonsense that's been coming out of the Trump administration weeks and weeks before this conflict started. Say you? They will be in the driver's seat.
Well, Iran, of course, is facing a dilemma also. Certainly, they have, in a sense, the upper hand, because in retaliation for whatever the U.S. and Israel throw at them, they can cause far more destruction, not only to the region, but to the global economy. So the stakes are very high for everyone, including the United States of America and its allies, and Israel. Now, Iran would want, actually, to prevent more destruction of their country, of their infrastructure.
Of course.
This is normal. But they have now experienced that entering into negotiations with the United States doesn't lead to any durable solution of any kind. They have had two rounds of negotiations with them. And during the course of negotiations, the U.S. and Israel have attacked Iran. Now, if they go into a third round of negotiation on the same issues and with the same kind of proposal that Iran would make from their end, because there are certain red lines that they will not allow to be crossed, then we are in an impasse. Now, for America then to accept those red lines means a defeat. And that's not simply a defeat in terms of what is actually happening. It is beginning of the unraveling of American power in this region. Because if all their, with their, all their bases and all their assets, they cannot force Iran down on its knees, and on the contrary, have seen their bases being attacked and their military people being evacuated, and their assets also, financial and economic assets potentially also under attack, they don't really have a good option. And if America were to run away from this, it will actually, apart from what I said, it will be a big, big disaster for America's geopolitical power in the world. Therefore, I think Iranian demands, which they have made, which are maximalist, as you know, compensation, and they will control the state of Hormuz. They will continue to actually have a nuclear program, a peaceful nuclear program, and the right to enrichment, and permanent security, international guarantees, and this and that. Now, who's going to give it to them? And America cannot simply walk away. So I'm pretty pessimistic about what lies ahead, because Iran will not cave in, and America will suffer a tremendous blow to their power, to their global power, if they were eased out of the Middle East, as may happen. Now, the other odd thing is that Trump, in his Truth Social post, says that Witkoff and Jared Kushner have been having talks for a week with the Iranian side. But come on, they don't trust Witkoff and Kushner.
I think this circus has to be retired, okay? I mean, this is just beyond absurd, okay? Stanley, you know, none of us know how this is going to end, but I will take money to the bank with the proposition there's no returning to the status quo ante. That is for sure, Stanley.
Yeah, no. Trump, again, is going to recraft the identity of the United States. He will declare it a victory. He will announce they've reached certain agreements. Iran will say, no, you're lying. He'll say, no, you're lying. He'll say it's in the best interest. We've accomplished what we've wanted to accomplish. We've shown the world we can walk and fight and resist and pursue justice on our own. He will rewrite the script and move on. And as long as the American economy begins to get a little bit better, what did he do with his lie the other day? He lied. The price of oil dropped a little bit. The stock market went up. Iran said, you're lying. Boof, we're back to where we were. This is a fool. This is someone who has no handle on politics, whether it's international or domestic. The real villain here, the abdicator, is the United Nations. There's clear issues of violations of international law. There's clear issues with regard to the Strait and with regard to military adventurism and attacks by the United States. Yet the United Nations has done nothing but point a finger at Iran. Iran was doing nothing. It was being a self-determined, independent nation pursuing peaceful atomic power. And all of a sudden, the United States, for political reasons, plays into Netanyahu's hand. And what does the United Nations say or do? Nothing. And until the world community begins to flex its muscles over the United States' aggression in the region, over Israel's unmatched, unparalleled attack throughout the area, it's not going to be, in reality, a peaceful resolution. Trump, you can count on, is getting ready to move on. That's his story. That's what he's always done.
Abdel, you know, we keep talking about Trump as a decision maker here. I think it's widely believed and it's correct that Israel convinced Trump to go down this path here. Highly influential lobby. How many times was Netanyahu in the United States? Like 7 times in a short period of time. So if Israel was critical in getting the United States into this conflict, it will be critical in how the United States tries to get out of it. So we're not out of the woods, gentlemen, far from it. Go ahead in London.
You know, to be honest, the Israelis succeeded in dragging Trump and the United States to the Middle East and to enter this war on their behalf. This is the talk of the people and also official in the Middle East. The problem is, until now, the Israeli actually never achieved any of its aims in this war, and it is actually counterproductive completely. As I said, people are now watching the Israeli, running away to the shelters, running away to the tunnels in order to protect themselves days and nights. They never did actually pass through in this kind of situation. They never lived that way. They used to do their wars outside their borders completely. And they used to fight against these Arab governments who are not really strong enough. Now they have a different enemy completely. And, you know, the military bases, American military bases on the Middle East destroyed completely now. And that's why they are begging London to actually allow them to use their military bases in Cyprus. This is a situation. We never had a Middle East like that. We never had a country which can stand in front of America and also the Israeli and say to them, enough is enough. The American always saying, you know, we want to change the regime here, to change the regime there. But this is not actually the Palestinian Authority where they are changing. No, Iran is a continent. Iran is a super regional superpower. 6,600,000 square kilometers. It is not actually Gaza, which is 150 square miles. No, this is the situation in the Middle East. You know, the Israelis are paying a very, very heavy price. Now it is a war of attrition. Now there are another, you know, faction who are joining this war. Now Hezbollah in Lebanon, they are giving Israeli a very, very hard lesson. The same thing now the Yemenis are preparing themselves in order to enter this war. So how the Trump is claiming or preparing himself to claim victory. He wants to be the king of Gaza. He wants to be the king of Harbor Strait. He wants to be the king of the Middle East. And in the end, the American people are paying a very heavy price because of this man who doesn't know what to do. He is behaving as, you know, a real estate broker, not actually a leader of the biggest or the strongest country in the world. He wants to make profit to his own people. He raised the prices of oil. He bring it
but
down.
But he's not going to succeed in any of them. We all know that. Kanwal, back in New Delhi here, as we're speaking here, I mean, you know, the markets might be happy, though there's a pause going on right now. I'm pretty sure there were a lot of put options and some people made some money off of that. And that's maybe a program in itself here. But as we speak, the American troops apparently are en route to the region. You know, so this pause on the destruction of infrastructure, okay, that's great, fine. But it doesn't change what else is going on the ground or on the sea in this case. Go ahead in New Delhi.
Couple of things. Kalibaf, the person Trump is supposed to be in touch with, has actually said precisely what you said just now, that he's been playing the oil market. And a lot of people around him have made a lot of money. Because of this. But be that as it may, with regard to some of the things that have been mentioned, Peter, I don't think Trump trying to find an off-ramp and walking away from the situation is the end of the story. In fact, the repercussions of this will be very, very big. The equations.
We only have a minute left, but let me rephrase my question. Can Trump just declare victory and go home?
No. Okay. Because that won't be a victory. There'll be a tremendous loss. The equations with China will change. Equations with Russia will change. The equations in the Middle East, the countries that are relying on America, those equations will change. They look for other opportunities. BRICS will become stronger. The whole multipolar dimension of geopolitics will gain more strength. So it's not simply any longer between the United States and Iran. It has much wider repercussions, and the United States simply cannot walk away. And if they're going to send Marines to actually take ground action, then he's going to put his foot deeper into the mud and actually suffer a bigger potential defeat. Contrary to all the promises he made that the United States will not fight forever wars and will not get involved in these kind of adventures, which Biden and others did. Now, his MAGA base is already cracking, as I understand. So there's going to be repercussions back home in terms of his own future and in terms of the future of American power in the context of global geopolitics.
All for a war that never needed to happen in the first place. I think you wrote a very interesting political obituary. Fascinating discussion. Gentlemen, I want to thank my guests in New York, London, and in New Delhi. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.